The content of this program is intended for people who are blind and print impaired. Greetings, everyone. I'm Jennifer Green for the North Carolina Reading Service, and this is Teen Magazines. For the next half hour, I will be reading to you from TeenVogue.com and KidSpiritOnline.com. Our first article today from TeenVogue.com. Resist, obstruct, protect our people. Maxwell Frost has a plan for taking on Trump. This article was written by Lexi McMenamin on February 5th. As the chaos of the Trump and de facto Musk administration bashes the attention spans of Americans, many of those trying to follow along have wondered where exactly the Democrats have been. John Stewart recently bemoaned the attempt to send out Senator Chuck Schumer, Democrat New York, one of our blandest protesters, to counter Trump's attempts to impose tariffs on U.S. allies. Critics have wondered if the Democrats intend to stand up to Trump's onslaught at all, particularly with Democrats like Senator John Fetterman, Democrat, Pennsylvania, backing Republicans' anti-immigrant Laken Riley Act. That was the question Representative Maxwell Frost, Democrat, Florida, 28, put to a crowd of his congressional colleagues and hundreds of protesters during a rally outside the Treasury Department yesterday. Are we the minority, or are we the opposition? Along with Representatives Ayanna Pressley, Democrat, Massachusetts, Jasmine Crockett, Democrat, Texas, and other members of Congress, Frost tried to enter the Treasury, seeking answers about Elon Musk's hostile takeover of federal financial data. On Wednesday, Frost and other Democrats on the House Oversight Committee tried to subpoena Musk to get more information. Republicans on the committee ultimately killed the motion. The plan is obstruct where we can, and we have a lot of vehicles to do that, Frost tells Teen Vogue. If you are a House member and you're just saying, well, we're in the minority, there's nothing we can do. We've already lost the battle. And that's what Trump really wants us to do, essentially bow down and not do anything to fight. We want to see Democrats get more involved. Frost spoke to Teen Vogue at length about the Democrats' plan for taking on Trump and what he's willing to risk to obstruct the Trump administration. Note, this interview has been lightly edited and condensed for clarity. Teen Vogue, TV. Let's get into it. Voters saw you doing some stuff that we haven't been seeing so much so far from the Democrats. What's the plan? That's what people are asking, right? Representative Maxwell Frost, MF. In any opposition, the plan belongs to many different groups of people. If you are depending on House Dems to do everything at this moment, we're effed. We're cooked. It has to be outside organizations, because we can't do the litigation. We have to work with the ACLU, American Civil Liberties Union. We have to work with the unions. We all work together. We work with Move On and Indivisible on the mobilization. Specifically, for Democrats in the House, we need to be super active and involved in all of it, and helping them coordinate. But also, it's important that we use every tool that we have in the legislature to obstruct what's going on right now. That is a legitimate place of frustration that a lot of folks have had. It's like, why is a single Democrat voting to confirm any of these cabinet nominees when, at the same time, we have a constitutional crisis and an unelectable billionaire, Elon Musk, is being given access to sensitive records of the federal government? Democrats have to take a step back and see that this isn't a normal beginning of a presidency. It's not just a conservative president that's coming in and proposing conservative things. It's a far-right, authoritarian president who has crowned a billionaire and given him the ability to do whatever he wants, even if it's illegal, so we have to look at it that way. There's many different things we can do from the legislative place to obstruct and push back. In the Senate, we see more and more Democrats saying, "You know what? I'm voting no on every single nominee. I'm going to do what I can to help push back against this guy." The big thing here is it's a question of oversight. This is the reason why we have ethics rules with a lot of top government officials when they have access to private data. That's the big issue with what's going on with Elon on a bigger scale. I mean, this man has multiple businesses, and multiple of them have received direct subsidies and funding from the United States government. And now that guy's in charge of the government efficiency of the entire government, it's not ethical, and there's absolutely zero oversight. I said yesterday that if someone asked me, "Hey, is Elon Musk stealing money from the government?" I don't know. And the fact that I don't know, as a member of the Oversight Committee, is a big deal. I organized about 24 members to go to the Department of Treasury. It's not a normal thing for members of Congress to pull up to Treasury. Usually, Treasury comes to us and we do a hearing. But these aren't normal times. We do have to demand access to these buildings. If they don't let us in, we need to then walk out to the front door and have 1,000 people there and protest. That's what we did yesterday, with 1,000 people, after we were denied access to the Treasury. I know people are doing it today at the Department of Labor. TV. Particularly with the trans healthcare situation we're seeing, there's been a ton of overcompliance with the executive orders. Hospitals from New York City to Los Angeles to Washington, D.C., have reportedly canceled appointments in the wake of Trump's order moving to ban gender-affirming care for trans youth under 19. At the state and local level, this is already causing a lot of chaos. What would you say to people unsure of how to respond to their states and to institutions already falling in line? MF, I'm glad you brought that up. Because overcompliance, this is what happens when you have authoritarians coming into office. Some companies were getting rid of their diversity, equity, inclusion, DEI programs. A lot of things were being done before Trump even got inaugurated. Being an authoritarian leader, that's part of their goal. They don't want to have to pass legislation. They just want it done. One way members of Congress can push back on this locally is they need to contact the hospitals themselves. A lot of members of Congress have relationships with hospital CEOs and folks like that for other reasons, and they need to be calling and saying, "No, under federal law, you don't need to do this. Why are you doing this?" And if they refuse to answer, they need to go ahead and make things public and make a big deal about it, because we might be in this moment now, but we won't be in this moment forever. I think that's on members of Congress, but also on organizers, advocates, people locally, to put that pressure on hospitals now. The litigation is also important for stopping these policies. Recently, a judge put a pause on the executive order having to do with forcing trans people who are inmates in prison to go to the wrong gender wing of prisons. So much of what this guy is doing is just blatantly illegal, but that's also part of their strategy. They are hoping and praying it goes to the Supreme Court, which they have stacked with conservative justices. and they're hoping that the Supreme Court will then overturn long-standing legal precedent. So people should stay alert when you see something struck down. That's a win, but also realize we are far from the end because they will appeal it, and they want it to go up and up and up in the courts until it gets to the top court. You bring up a good point that even in so-called blue states and blue cities, we're still seeing the overcompliance. A lot of times, because those areas haven't worked up the muscle to fight these kinds of battles that a lot of people in blue states take for granted. They take those rights for granted. They take where they're at for granted. But people need to realize that no matter if you're a blue state or red state, when an authoritarian is the president of the United States, we all have to be ready to fight back. TV. You were an organizer before you were a congressman. I'm sure you've seen people online being like, "Oh no, where are all the protests?" But you also know from being in Florida that protest itself has become increasingly criminalized. There's been some rhetoric like, "I want to see my congresspeople willing to risk arrest to fight this stuff." What would you say about the role of direct action protest right now for constituents or in ways that you plan to resist? MF. I've been deeply involved in direct action. What we did yesterday was a direct action. I've seen some of the comments under the action we did yesterday. People say, "Why don't you just jump the fence or run through it?" Number one, the number of people willing to show up to actions like we did yesterday is limited. Those numbers are growing. I organized that in like 12 hours because of organizing work I've done before. But what I also need people to do is realize we also need to think strategically, and we need to be here to do our jobs, to do this work. People want to see the maximalist action done up front, and I get it. I'm someone who's been arrested multiple times in Florida, so I get it. But before I was arrested, I was a part of 80 or 90 protests and actions where I wasn't arrested. I think sometimes, unfortunately, the online world romanticizes the most extreme parts of movement. We see this a lot with strikes. You see a lot of people online talking about strikes being a fun, cool thing. If you talk to any actual union organizer, you don't want to get to a place where you have to be on strike. Strikes are hard on people. Strikes are hard on families, the workers. They're risking being fired. They could be losing their pay. People don't want to get to that point. It is a tool that could be used, but the whole point is, what's before the strike? There's tons of negotiations. There's other direct actions. There's demonstration pickets. There's all these things that go on. You don't just go to the thing that people have romanticized. If I would have just stormed this gate, which, by the way, is at the Treasury Department, which is pretty much the White House, I can promise everybody not only would I have been arrested, but I would have been arrested and been made an example. I probably would have been charged with a felony of trying to storm a federal building. The irony is, a lot of things that the January 6thers were charged with and were just pardoned for, I promise you, I would have been charged with the full extent of the law and be out of commission for a long time, taking up resources and attention on something that I don't think will yield a great result in this moment. People shouldn't question if I'm willing to be arrested. I've been arrested, but it's not about that. It's not just about members of Congress making decisions to try to get on TV and stuff. We're working with groups, working with unions. We're trying to figure out, over the next 4 years, how we are going to resist, obstruct, protect our people. let me do the next 2 years, because we want to take back the House and have real institutional power to stop what's going on. But right now, we don't have the institutional power. We have the people power, which is so powerful, but we got to be strategic. TV. I want to give you an opportunity to address people within your party, like John Fetterman, who are going along with parts of the Trump agenda. Do you have anything to say? Or to the people that are criticizing their reps for seeming like they're just posting through this whole process, seeing that, being pissed off? MF. It sucks that the constituents have to reach out to their office and say, hey, this isn't normal. Look what's going on. But unfortunately, there's a lot of grifters in politics, and there's a lot of people who see this moment and they want to curry favor with the authoritarian, which I think is what you're seeing in the Senate with some people. Number one, I don't think history is going to look kindly on those people at all, because things are bad now, but I do think things could get worse, and we have to be fighting back. So, to people who have been frustrated, I get it, and I'm with you on it, and that's why we did what we did yesterday. People are starting to see the representatives be more active, and that's a good thing. There are some people who would say it's not important, but I think it is important. I hate Trump, but there's one thing that we should look at when it comes to him, and it's that he loves making sure his base always is feeling the love. In any political movement, that's very, very, very important, and our base is telling us, hey, we want to see more of what you're doing. The vibe has changed, for sure, and that's because people have been speaking out, and that's important. We're in a very crappy time, but I've been telling people, we've got to choose hope in this moment, and we will get through it. We've been here before. Our people have been here before. And if we submit prematurely, we submit at all, we have actually lost. I would say we haven't lost right now. We're just in a really bad place, but we can't actually lose. I'm not gonna let that happen. Our next article from KidSpiritOnline.com. A review of Wings in the Wild. This article was written by Siddhant Raj on December 2, 2024. Wings in the Wild. Author, Margarita Engel. Anthenium Books, 2023. Pages 224. Rating, 4 stars. Friedrich Schiller once said, "Art is the daughter of freedom." This quote succinctly encapsulates the core trope that intertwines the profound ideas of art and freedom, the two primary keystones that drive the story of Wings in the Wild by Margarita Engel. Written in verse, this book is internationally commended for its lyrical style and deep allegorical connotations. The novel's unique structure helps the reader connect to the characters' emotions and struggles. Using its poetic narrative, Wings in the Wild intricately laces the ideas of art, freedom, and romance into a sublime depiction of two teens' struggles in their journey toward tackling environmental crises. This delightful and stimulating novel serves as a quintessential portrayal of the intricacy of nature and human resilience. Wings in the Wild starts by showcasing the ordeals faced by two Cuban teenagers, Soleda and Dariel. Soleda's life is turned upside down when her parents are imprisoned for violating censorship laws by creating secret art, a rebellious act under their oppressive regime. On the other hand, a tragic wildfire causes the demise of Dariel's parents, who used to be stars in the telenovela world. Soleda and Daryl encounter each other at a refugee camp where they seek asylum. Although they come from different worlds, one thing they share is their undeterred drive to make a sea of change in the world by working towards saving the environment. Engel's lucid description of the hardships faced by Daryl and Soleda shines a needed light on the arduous lives of Cuban refugees, and at the same time helps us understand the adverse effects of natural disasters. Teeming with imagery and allegories, the dual perspectives of Soleda and Daryl deepen the reader's understanding of the core message Engel conveys. Also, she lucidly balances realism and poetic idealism in the novel, thereby helping readers relate to the adversities faced by the characters. However, I found the plot to be a bit too predictable, as it only revolves around the oppression, resistance, love arc. Along with portraying the effects of major crises, Wings in the Wild illustrates how a strong bond and shared values can have the everlasting power to make a difference in society. Albeit from vastly contrasting backgrounds, Soleda and Daryl find common ground in their keenness toward nature and art. This shows how love and solidarity play a crucial role in transcending the social paradigms that confine one's mind. I resonated with this idea as I am someone that enjoys art and a little bit of romance in books. Since art is used as a metaphor for resistance and freedom in the book, it serves as a motif in Soleda and Daryl's journey to challenge norms. Furthermore, Engel also incorporates multiple allegories which act as a locomotive for the themes conveyed in the book. The author very meticulously shows wings, which symbolize flight, as a metaphor for freedom, juxtaposing the common perspective that wings symbolize escapism. Soleda and Daryl face their own challenges for freedom, and the idea of wings and birds represent how they rise above these adversities to propel positive change. Another connection I noticed in the book is between the wildness of nature and untamed forces of the environment, which are spurred by human actions. This destruction of nature could serve as a metaphor for how human greed and corruption can be detrimental to environmental equilibrium. In addition to these intriguing themes, one element I found fascinating about this novel is how Engel subtly blends concepts from her previous story, Your Heart, My Sky, to convey the ideas shared in the book. Through this continuation of ideas, Engel creates a literary ecosystem where she portrays the recurring significance of activism, nature, and human resilience. I would give this book 4 out of 5 stars, as it gave me abundant insights into environmental crises, as well as how human resilience plays an important part in tackling them. I also appreciate Engel's incorporation of metaphors in her efforts to communicate themes like love, art, and freedom. Moreover, as someone who enjoys poetry and philosophy, I could relate to the format of the book and the various ideas it encompassed. The only element that could have been enhanced was the plot predictability. All in all, Wings in the Wild inspired me to break through boundaries and constantly soar higher in life. Our next article from TeenVogue.com. Justin Bieber unfollows Hailey on Instagram, claims he was hacked. Stuff is getting sus. This article was written by Teen Vogue on January 21st. All within the same weekend, Justin Bieber called his wife, Hailey Bieber, the greatest woman he'll ever know, and then unfollowed her on Instagram. Huh? Let's rewind. The Justice singer has been extremely active on social media over the last few days, posting photo dump after photo dump after photo dump of his vacation in Aspen, Colorado, with wife Haley, their dogs, a group of friends, and likely their almost six-month-old son, Jack Blues. Per People, the Bieber fam was also joined in Aspen by their close friends Kendall and Kylie Jenner. All seemed to be going well, with Justin all smiles and shots of him doing cold plunges, ice skating with Haley, and seemingly recording new music. On Saturday, January 18th, he reposted the photos of their ice skating date on his Instagram stories, writing alongside a gif of a heart, "The greatest woman I have and will ever know." Justin Bieber is no stranger to gushing over his wife on Maine, and did so earlier this month when ringing in the new year. He posted Haley's bikini and fur coat thirst trap seen round the world with the caption, "Going anywhere with you, BB. Happy New Year." So, why did he unfollow her on Instagram? On Tuesday, January 21st, eagle-eyed fans and tabloids noticed that Justin unfollowed Haley. That same morning, Justin took to Instagram stories to debunk the rumors in a now-deleted post. "Someone went on my account and unfollowed my wife," he wrote against a plain white background. "S is getting sus out here." At the time of writing, the couple is now following each other back once more. The couple have faced relentless swells of divorce rumors following the birth of their son, Jack Blues, in August 2024, despite reports that they have grown closer and fallen even more in love since little JB's arrival. Haley has seen a whole different side to Justin since becoming a father, and she's more in love with him than ever, a source close to the couple told Page Six on December 26th, 2024. Hailey Bieber appeared to shut down these rumors on her Instagram stories on December 30th with a vague message to haters and has shut down similar rumors multiple times in the past. Now, even though the couple truly seems closer than ever, with this incident, it seems like another wave of divorce rumors could reach its crest. Who knows? Maybe the "someone" Justin is referring to is Jack Blues. He could have been playing with his dad's phone and tapped the wrong button. Kids, am I right? We've run out of time for today's episode of Teen Magazines. I'm Jennifer Green, reading for the North Carolina Reading Service. The content of this program is intended for people who are blind and print impaired. Teen Magazines is available as a podcast at our website, ncreadingservice.org. If you have any comments or questions, please call us at 919-832-5100.